The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
And a good morning, everybody. It is Thursday, the 6th of May. Beautiful day lies ahead. A beautiful Texas springtime type day, and I could not be happier. And here in the talk show world, obviously, our name of our game since January 20th and maybe all the way till January 20th of 2025 with a nice interlude in 22 as we take back the House and maybe the Senate is talking a lot about Washington, a lot of just batting away the terrible ideas coming at us every day from the Harris-Biden administration. But do remember that we live in Texas. We live in Texas, a conservative enclave in an increasingly leftward-leaning nation. We are a red state with some blue measles. We have Democrats in Texas. We just don't let them run the place. And another election has come and gone proving that. In about 60 seconds, one of my great friends, State Senator Brian Hughes, we're going to get an update on constitutional carry, where there was enormously big news made yesterday. The heartbeat bill, a magnificent pro-life measure, and the absolute fascinating talk show topic of big tech censorship. Twitter, Facebook, all of these platforms are run by fascists who are looking to muzzle conservative speech. What can we do about that? What is the best answer to them being private companies that can kind of do what they want and we can like it or not like it? Anyway, you hear Florida Governor Ron DeSantis talking about actually punishing platforms that mute politicians or kick them off the platform, kind of like what's been done to Trump, and that Facebook doubled down on yesterday. So Senator Hughes in 60 seconds, and the only thing we need to do in those 60 seconds, only thing more important right now than talking to Brian is talking to God. Lord, guide us and protect us as we face the challenges of each new day. Be with us as we chart a course out of our COVID nightmare. We thank you every day for this blessed nation and for your hand in creating it. Fill our hearts with the energy to protect the freedoms which come from you, which our nation was founded to protect. Guide us as we try to protect the unborn. We try to get our elections reliable. We try to get borders that are secure. All these things designed to make a greater nation. If we follow you, Lord, we know we can get through anything. And we ask these things in your holy name. Amen. Okay, heads right, hearts right. Now let's go to a guy who's fighting the good fight every day. It is just wonderful to say hi to District 1, northeast corner of Texas out there, Mineola, Lamar County, all those wonderful northeastern counties, Paris, where my in-laws once lived, just the best. State Senator Brian Hughes, great to have you, sir. How you doing?
Mark, it's a great day. I'm so glad to be on in Georgia for years, and what a joy for me to get to be on a day like today.
Well, and I tell you what, right at the top of the show, where everything I was going to talk about right out of the box is something you can update us on. 1 hour from now, one of the great experts on guns, the author of the great More Guns, Less Crime, John Lott, will join us with some of the academics and the underpinning of why constitutional carry is smart. Why don't you give us an update? What exactly happened yesterday?
Very exciting, Mark. So the Texas House passed Senate Bill, House Bill 1927, constitutional carry. It came over to the Senate, and yesterday the Senate passed that bill on what's called second and third reading. You know what that means. So the bill is out of the Senate, a couple of changes that the House has to work out, and it's on its way to the governor, and he says he's going to sign it. And so it's a big deal for Texas. We'll be the 21st or 22nd state to have constitutional carry. Law-abiding citizens are entitled to own a gun, will be able to carry it. It makes sense. It's constitutional carry. And so Texas has been leading the way for a long time on Second Amendment rights. And you said it well. Good guys with guns, that means less crime. That means more safety. It's better for everybody.
It does indeed. What roughly was the Senate vote? How did that break down?
A party line vote in the Texas Senate, 18-13. And Mark, you get it. Many of our Republicans, they're all rock solid. Many represent districts that are maybe a little more purple. And constitutional carry sounds scary to folks who aren't gun people, right? What does this mean? Is this the OK Corral? But we know that law-abiding citizens with guns, we know that's a good thing. When we did the handgun license back in the 90s, that was scary for a lot of folks. Then campus carry, then open carry. And each time, it's worked because good people with guns we're not concerned about. So Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick really led the Senate through this because 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, the votes were not there. But folks prayed, folks called, folks looked at the bills, looked at the law, and so thankful. Senator Charles Shortner from Georgetown, north of Austin, did a remarkable job carrying that bill. My East Texas State Rep, Matt Schaefer, over in Tyler, has the House bill, and they threaded the needle, working with law enforcement to get something that's not as much of a concern for them while working with gun rights groups and real people. We're very thankful. This bill should be on its way to the governor.
1813, the only barrier is back to the House for some amendments. What are those, and is there anything dicey in there?
Oh, it's a great question. And so at the margin, what do you do? How do you determine where a gun can be carried? How do you determine who gets to carry a gun? Felons, we know they shouldn't. So the Senate added an amendment. Right now, it's a third-degree felony if you're already a felon to be carrying a pistol. We want to make that a first-degree felony. We want our gun laws to be aimed at criminals, not law-abiding citizens, right? We also want to make steps so that people will still be encouraged to get their license to carry so they can have reciprocity with other states. So we're adding provisions where that license to carry is going to be even easier to get, not limiting the training, but making it smoother process, and also making sure that, for example, if you're drunk, being drunk and carrying a pistol, not a good idea.
Yes.
And so we made sure that was clear in the law as well.
That's always good to make obvious some things that you shouldn't have to, but are a good idea to go ahead and make obvious. Another thing that is obvious is the moral necessity, the legal necessity of our pro-life state. Again, obviously, we have Democrats. There are 13 of them in the House, 18 in the Senate, 18 Republicans. Let's talk about a bill that is specifically attached to you. In fact, a couple of things with regard to abortion. What is the status of the heartbeat bill?
Mark, the heartbeat bill, Senate Bill 8, the most important bill I've got, says when a heartbeat is detected, when that little baby growing inside her mother's womb, which ought to be the safest place in the world, right? That little baby is more helpless, more innocent than she'll ever be. When that heartbeat is detected, an abortion cannot be performed. Her life will be protected in Texas. About 12 states have passed heartbeat bills. They're winding their way to the Supreme Court. This Texas heartbeat bill is different. This has a better enforcement mechanism. It allows for private citizens to get involved, and we believe it's going to take effect immediately. And so that bill, I was so honored to carry that bill in the Texas House. We passed that in the Texas Senate. We passed that bill with bipartisan support. Republicans and Democrats voted for the heartbeat bill. The bill went over to the Texas House. Representative Shelby Slauson from Central Texas, in your listening area, just south of Dallas area, remarkable, remarkable young mother, attorney, brand new member of the Texas House. She carried that bill. She studied. She worked hard. She presented the bill passionately and accurately and precisely. And the Texas House passed the heartbeat bill yesterday, again, with a bipartisan vote, as it should be. We're talking about life, human life, innocent human life. So today, the House expects to do what's called third reading, mostly a procedural vote, as you know. Now, the House did make a couple of changes to the bill, and so you know that means it has to come back to the Senate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm the author of the Senate bill, and I think the House changes are great. And so I will move to concur with Senate, with House amendments. And if the Senate agrees, that bill is on its way to Governor Abbott. We could have that on Governor Abbott's desk as early as next week. And that bill is going to save babies.
So let's not bury the lead. We had Democrats voting for this for what is a really – so one Democrat makes it bipartisan. Who might that have been?
One Democrat in the Texas Senate, Eddie Lucio, a veteran senator from the Rio Grande Valley, represents his district.
Well,
his district's a conservative district.
And
they're
I've always
pro-life.
Said, and Hispanics are pro-life. This
they
is
are.
All you know, and Black America is pro-life.
Yes.
I mean, we could do another
yes.
talk show on that. So, all right, if the term heartbeat bill is interesting. It refers to once you hear a heart, you know, hear a heartbeat, we're going to leave that baby alone. Technology has changed this. I was telling the story, you know, with I've got a daughter about to turn 30 and a son that just turned 18, and both those heartbeats, I remember it took, you know, till like 10, 11, 12. 12 weeks to really hear the pew, 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 pew. Yes. Now we got six. So improving technology enables the hearing of heartbeat a lot earlier, which means that is the point at which anyone should recognize that that is a distinct human life worthy of protection.
Amen. Amen. It's the distinct human life worthy of protection. What is civil government's highest responsibility if not protecting innocent human life?
What's the penalty? I mean, if somebody decides, hey, 8 weeks, 9 weeks, 10 weeks, abortion time, we're not going to do that. Doctors can be tricky. What's the penalty?
Great question, Mark. So those 12 heartbeat bills that have passed around the country provide for criminal enforcement. The district attorney finds this is happening, and he's supposed to go after the doctor. But you know what's happening in our urban areas around the country. We have district attorneys, many of them, who don't want to enforce pro-life laws. In fact, last fall in the New York Times, which I don't read that much, but it was an ad in the New York Times. I saw it online. A number of district attorneys from around the country, big counties, Dallas County in Texas, a few others in Texas, even some attorney generals, not ours, even some attorney generals said, hey, you states, you may pass a heartbeat bill, but we're not going to enforce it. So the DA who's sworn to uphold the law says, I'm not going to enforce that law. And so, Mark, this bill provides for private civil enforcement. It's just like the example might be Medicaid fraud. And the law in Texas, if you discover Medicaid fraud, you, Mark Davis, private citizen, you discover Medicaid fraud, you can bring a claim, bring that to the attention of the state, and the wrong gets righted. And so everyone is empowered to do that. So under this bill, any person other than the government, any person can bring a claim against a doctor who either fails to check for a heartbeat and does an abortion, mm-hmm. or checks for a heartbeat, the heartbeat's there, and they do the abortion. So a doctor is going to think twice before they do an illegal abortion, because anyone in Texas can bring that claim. We don't have to rely on the district attorney who may or may not be willing to enforce the law. We also believe this law will take effect immediately. Most pro-life bills, we get sued, they get stopped in court, and we wait and wait and wait for the Supreme Court. We believe this law, because of the way it's drafted, will take effect as soon as the law comes into play. And we believe this case will make it to the Supreme Court quicker than other heartbeat laws. We're very excited. This will save lives, and this could be the law that overturns Roe versus Wade.
Which leads us directly to our other pro-life issue. State Senator Brian Hughes is with us. I was talking to your colleague Angela Paxton about this a couple of weeks ago. This, I believe, is called the Human Life Protection, where if Roe v. Wade happens to be overturned at some point, and we are between legislative sessions, because we only have you guys at work every other year, which is another awesome thing about Texas, it has a kind of a trigger in it that if Roe v. Wade is overturned, enabling the states to have whatever abortion laws they wish, it's kind of something we can bring right off the shelf and enact immediately. Tell me how that works.
Mark, you got it. The wonderful Angela Paxton, your great senator in Collin County in North Texas, who's been such a blessing in the Texas Senate. Even before that, we know her well. And so that trigger law, that's right. So when the Supreme Court overturns Roe versus Wade, or when they weaken it, when they give the state more authority to protect little unborn babies, this law says immediately Texas law will step into place and fill that void. So as you say, we may not be there. So this law provides the Attorney General will provide a report to us every year. What did the Supreme Court do on pro-life laws? What's the status of the law? And based on that report, as they've given us more room to protect little babies, Texas law will step in. It won't require us to come back into session. We're all for that, but we want to protect those little babies immediately, as quickly and as much as we possibly can.
All right, we've done Second Amendment, done pro-life. Let's complete the trifecta with big tech social media censorship. This is a community of fascists out there, Twitter, Facebook, obviously shutting down conservative speech. I know it. You know it. I am fascinated by the debate over what we can really do about it. What does Senate Bill 12 do? That's yours, too. And then let's talk about whether these are private companies that can do what they want, or what enables us to take certain action. Tell me what the bill does first.
You got it. Senate Bill 12 is a unique approach. Many states are trying things, and we're glad. That's federalism, right? One state tries this, another state tries something else. Senate Bill 12 changes the current law, because under federal law, Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, you're familiar with it.
Oh, yeah.
It limits what states can do, limits what people can do, and it gives these companies immense power, too much power. So Senate Bill 12 wires its way around that federal statute. We worked with very sharp law professors, attorneys, scholars to get this right. And this is different than other states have done. About a half a dozen states are looking at our approach. So this says, complying with federal law, if you as a Texan are knocked offline, deplatformed, pushed down because of your free speech, your First Amendment rights, your religion, your politics, your First Amendment protected speech, if you do that, this allows you to go directly to any court in Texas and to bring a suit against that social media company. You can ask the court for an order to get you back online, and if you win, the social media company has to pay your attorney's fees. So we're talking about millions of Texans for the first time ever having the right to hold these companies accountable. And again, we don't rely on some government agency or even an elected official.
So here's the thing. Let's say I am liberal hack Facebook, liberal hack Twitter, and I knock somebody off, and it's just because they're conservative. It's just a viewpoint I don't like. And somebody sues me. So we're meeting in court, and I say, hey, guess what? I ain't the government. It's not a First Amendment issue. I'm Facebook. I'm Twitter. I'm Mark Zuckerberg. I'm that Jack guy, whatever his name is, the Unabomber.
Right.
And I can admit or deny anybody I want. How am I wrong?
Mark, it's a thorny issue for conservatives because these are private businesses. But here's what we recognize. 2 points. One, these companies have become common carriers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean by that. I bet you have a cell phone, and in America – your cell phone company is a private company, and you have a contract with them. But as a society and in the law, we don't let them deny you service because they don't like your religion. Mm-hmm. How about your cable television? The cable TV company can't cut you off because of your politics, because they are common carriers. They've chosen to enter into this business, and they accept certain responsibilities when they do. And secondly, these social media companies, man, we don't always like it, but in many ways, that's the new town square, right? Mm-hmm. That's where folks go to express their views, to hash it out. And right now, we have a handful of people with a twisted, narrow worldview, as you described. We have an oligarchy, a handful of billionaires in San Francisco that have made themselves the gatekeepers of free speech. Mm-hmm. Well, not in America. That's the town square, and it's got to be open to everyone. That's First Amendment. So we are on solid constitutional ground. Justice Clarence Thomas, whom we idolize, has written on two occasions, even in the last couple of weeks, Section 230 does not prevent us holding these companies accountable, nor does the First Amendment.
Gotcha. It's not like you can go set up another Twitter in your backyard. I mean, God bless Parler and all these other all these wonderful alternative places for people to go. But the common carrier argument, the notion that there's the notion of an open marketplace and a free marketplace is if you don't like store A, go shop at store
That's
B.
That's right.
Well, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, et cetera, they're not government, but is there anything about – are they monopolies? Does that work or not really?
So, Mark, it's funny. If you go look at the law on monopolies and antitrust and when the government thought companies got too big, mm-hmm. you look at the market share that these guys have, and they dwarf Standard Oil. They dwarf Rockefeller. They make him look like a mom and pop. The market share they have is so immense, and they have such power, and it's completely out of the public view. You know how it works when you try to advertise online. If I run a political ad on a newspaper, TV, radio, as you know, I get a printout showing when it ran, how long, what time. But now with ads on Facebook and Google, you don't know when it ran, if it ran. It's completely hidden from view. We just know they control an immense piece of the market. And about social media, we have a handful of companies, and they've got America by the throat, and that's not the American way.
Senator Brian Hughes is with us, and you can follow him on Twitter at Sen, S-E-N, Brian with a Y, Sen Brian Hughes. Just thanks for getting us through all three of those wonderful issues. Appreciate your work, and thanks, and I know we'll be talking again soon.
Thankful for you, Mark.
You bet. God bless, Brian. Thank you, sir. All righty. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. Here's the thing. Okay, the common carrier thing, I get. Do you become a common carrier just if you develop that much market share? And as far as monopolies and such go, I've always been against antitrust stuff. When Microsoft, everybody said Microsoft is a monopoly. Well, somebody get in there and compete. I mean, Parler exists, and everybody says, "Oh, we're going to make Parler as big as Twitter." Guess what? Probably not. But it's there, and people can go there. The conservative in me enjoys the notion of being able to take some type of action against the fascist overlords of Twitter and Facebook. But the same conservative in me blanches at the notion of government telling them whom they can and cannot admit or deny admission to. Let's say you're kicked off of Twitter for something, and we all know these experiences, these examples. Trump kicked off of Facebook for nothing. A total false assertion that he incited the riots January 6th. But let's say somebody else does something that really is just particularly ugly, pernicious, incendiary, and Twitter or Facebook kicks them off. And are they going to come back and be able to use measures like this? You just kicked me off because I'm a pilot. It's a mess. I do not know what the pathway out of that is. All right, 866-660-5759, Mark Davis, 727.
The music's getting louder, the beat's getting fast. Summer's finally made it, yeah, it's finally here at last.
I know I could have done old-time rock and roll or, Hollywood Nights. Now let's go to the Against the Wind album and the great Bob Seger.
Everybody wants to do the horizontal bop. The busters from the country.
The greatness of horizontal bop.
Everybody wants to do the horizontal bop. Tell them we'll be dancing, dancing till we drop. Everybody wants to do the horizontal bop.
Bob Seger is 76 today, so we will dip into that catalog, but we'll dip into something different for Mike Gallagher. Our segment with him is next. News time, Gordon Griffin's here. I'm Mark Davis, 733.
The power of the music of the
Yeah, buddy! The original soundtrack. Phantom of the Opera. Mike
is
happy.
11 people in the audience.
New York is happy. 11 people in the audience. They're all happy. But as the news came of the reopening of Broadway this fall and tickets on sale like this morning, Mike immediately texts me back and tells me about a community of people decidedly not happy. And that would be Mike?
Well, the people that work on Broadway. But incidentally, to your quick point, for grins, tried to order Phantom of the Opera tickets online. You know me. You knew I would. Wicked is supposed to be on sale. Neither show is on sale right now. So there's such confusion. First of all, the whole New York community is like Cuomo has lost his mind. He made an announcement that was premature. It was wrong. We're not ready, blah, blah, blah. I don't know.
Now, when you say the Broadway community, the people who actually work to put on, it's reminiscent of teachers, the people who should be in the classroom, who should be just clawing and scratching to get into the classroom. That's like this Broadway version. Actors, set designers, they're all hesitant.
The musicians, the ushers.
They hate the reopening of Broadway? What?
It's a union thing.
Ugh.
It's a union thing. It's just like the teachers union. It is a union thing. And remember what a typical New Yorker is right now. They're in the fetal position, hiding in their tiny apartment, trembling, waiting for COVID to come get them. They are terrified in New York. It is the strangest thing you'll ever witness. I'm telling you, it's bizarre. And so with that in mind, a lot of these performers have no desire to go back to work. They've got, I was reading about a lady that I listened to on Sirius XM. I'm a big fan of that Broadway channel. There's a voiceover lady named Christine Petty, and she's great, and she's losing her vision. She's going blind. She's a young woman. And the actor's fund, which I contribute to, has put her up in a actor's fund supplied housing. They have a huge outreach, charitable outreaches to actors and musicians and performers. I mean, and I'm not saying that these people don't ever want to work. I'm just saying right now they're terrified. They don't want to go back to work, and they think Cuomo's announcement was preposterous. They don't understand it.
I just don't even know how to process that in the rest of the country, in the state where you are, Florida, in the state where I am, Texas. We're talking about all kinds of. And now, are we going to be, nut to butt in a concert venue next week? No, but we're talking about by the fall of this year that maybe we can put some people in a Broadway theater and they're I don't know. They get
I mean, the teachers union pushback, the American Federation of Teachers, is the best example of this. You're right. They're the first ones that ought to be ready to go. And they're not. They don't want to. And listen, for a lot of people outside of the theater community or the performing arts, this is a matter of being able to work from home. Listen, a lot of companies are going to. Do you know how much money companies can save by keeping people from to work remotely? Mm-hmm. You're going to lose rent. You got landlords impacted. You're going to have, you know, so this is going to be an interesting thing to see over the next few months. What I think, though, my gut tells me, and I believe I'm right on this, when stuff opens, when this finally starts to happen, it's going to happen in a blink of an eye. It's going to be quick. There's nothing even gradual about this. They're going to be scrambling to keep up with the demand. Already we know that air travel is at epic highs over the summer. Good luck. Call Delta. Call American. You better get ready to wait because they don't have enough people, and they got a lot of demand. So that kind of stuff is a good sign. You see great things. How about an interesting thing on my elevator in my apartment building this morning? Mm-hmm. The sign requiring masks is down.
Lady
next to me, oh my gosh, she said, where's the mask sign? She started hyperventilating, she turns to me with terrified eyes. I mean, you remember, I'm in St. Pete. It ain't exactly, you know, Keller. She looks at me, and she says, please keep your mask on.
Yeah.
And I swear to you, I almost ripped it off. I thought, just to have some fun, I'm going to rip it off and just laugh.
Give her a big old kiss.
Maybe a big sneeze.
Rip it off and cough. Stop. Don't be that guy. We were talking to somebody. I heard from somebody in the restaurant industry, and it was the conversation was about whether the waiters and wait staff are wearing masks. And around here in DFW, there are certain restaurants that are starting to tell the wait staff. Step one seems to be to tell the wait staff you can wear a mask if you want to, which is interesting, which sounds kind of like from my book. I mean, that sounds fine. But then the clientele gets a weird thing because they don't know upon arrival whether they're going to get a masked server or not. And some people absolutely want one. Some people absolutely don't. And other people don't care. So I think restaurants are at the point where they pretty well need to make a binary choice. Our servers are going to wear masks or they are not going to wear masks. And so an increasing number are simply going mask-free for the servers, which creates two instant reactions. Some people going, yes, freedom, and other people going, I ain't ready to go in there yet. And that's the free marketplace too.
And, you know, we're all just going to have to take our own path on this. I mean, last night, man, Tucker Carlson monologue, the whole monologue was casting shade on the vaccines.
Yep.
And that just makes people, I mean, everybody on social media was saying he's just wanting to get fired. He just wants to get canceled. You're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed. The machine doesn't let you question these things, and that should be problematic to everybody. On the other hand, I mean, listen, you come on after a guy, our colleague, every 5 minutes, Hewitt is saying you must get the vaccine. We have to get the vaccine. If we don't get everybody vaccinated, we're not going to get herd immunity. It's not going to be, and it's a public service, and you got to be patriotic, and yada, yada, yada. All the 10-minute monologue last night was remarkable. I don't even dare play clips of it. I'm afraid they'll come arrest me. You saw what he said about the deaths? That he was claiming that this site that tracks vaccine reactions, I think it's VARS.
Adverse Effect Reporting System.
Mm-hmm. Right. He's claiming that there have been a few thousand deaths so far from the COVID vaccine, and then he compared it to like the swine flu vaccine and the regular flu vaccine, and that was, you know, way more than normal. But then everybody, all I saw last night online were people saying, wait a minute, Tucker, they acknowledge and they have a disclaimer that they don't necessarily connect those deaths.
Correct. Not only do they not necessarily do it, an unbelievably infinitesimal percentage of them have been connected to the vaccine. I love Tucker. I want his monologues protected. I don't think he is in danger of being fired by Fox, but that was some reckless horse crap at the top of that show. The VAERS is a passive reporting system. VAERS, as it should be, it's every human being that ever gets the shot and ever has anything happen from a left eye twitch to a death. We want to hear about it. They say, tell us, and then we'll take a look at that massive fog of data and see if in there there's any connection between something in the vaccine and something bad that happened to somebody. Tucker's rant was essentially, we are being shielded from horrible death news. It was a terrible reckless monologue from Tucker Carlson. But guess what? He gets to do it. I bet it's X percent of people just love the hell out of it, and that's fine too. So let him say it, let them love it, and let people watch what they want to watch. I love Tucker, except kind of on this issue. And I just to go back, do you think that he's under pressure? I think Fox loves this. Fox is earning back some cred, you know, from some like ultra, you know, mega conservatives.
It's a good question. I want to go though to your rant. I want to first of all defend your rant because, you know, what I like is the fact that you're right. He gets to express this. He should not be taken off the air because he has a commentary that people might think is reckless or crap. And you get to react the way you
exactly.
just reacted.
That's the way America should be. Let everybody.
But that's
everybody
not the way America's working,
you
Mark.
Got that
and that's
right.
what's frustrating. The video platform Vimeo has erased Mike Lindell. Vimeo, as of Wednesday afternoon, has taken him down. Mike told, in a brief phone interview, told the Daily Beast, this is worse than what Twitter did to me and my company. This affects my business, the Lindell Recovery Network, which is a great outreach he's got for addicts, and the entrepreneurs who I work with. They've taken down Mike Lindell's presence. They've erased him from Vimeo. So that's the last social media platform I think that he's been on that he hasn't been removed. Now, guess what? That's wrong. Yesterday's Facebook doubling down on the Trump ban.
Yep.
That's wrong. It's like the phone company. I mean, the idea that if you are denied service with the phone company, you know what I mean? You're not allowed.
I do. And my guy, I love State Senator Brian Hughes, deployed that with me. And because this is killing me. As a conservative, we all know that we're being muted and we're being censored and we're being sidelined by these fascist platforms. But doggone it, man, I don't know what the solution is. Government telling them whom they can and cannot get rid of? What if they get rid of somebody who deserves to be gotten rid of? Every once in a while, you do get one of those.
What happens when they get rid of all the people that shouldn't be gotten rid of?
So
what do you do with the phone company kicking people off?
It's not the phone company.
But look at it as the phone company. Why do you ignore that? If Verizon started lining up, you got options with Verizon. You don't have to use Verizon. Right.
Exactly.
Listen to me. Hear me out. If Verizon started saying, we're not going to allow conservatives to buy our phones or be on our network,
right.
You going to be all right with that?
Well,
and it's not legal, Mark.
But here's
it's not legal.
I would go to AT&T. I would go to T-Mobile. I mean, I have now. But here's
wait
the
a
thing.
Minute. You okay with Verizon saying no conservatives allowed?
I'd be disgusted by that. But what am I supposed to? So the solution here, you know, Mr. Conservative, Mr. Liberty, which we supposedly are, is we're going to tell Verizon. I mean, the way I deal with life is people do what they want to do in a free country, and I may love it, I may hate it, and if I hate it, I'll go somewhere else. The problem with social media is sitting here with these phone companies is there are a bunch of equal footing phone companies. There is no other Facebook. There is no other Twitter, and that's where the best point against this censorship is you can't go start another Twitter in your backyard.
You're glossing over the fact that we do regulate Verizon. I know you don't like it. Your conservative purity test is anything goes, and I get it. I respect that, but
with
it's a dinosaur opinion, Mark.
I get it,
you got to apply the same standard
then
to
let's
Facebook
find a way to
and
do
Twitter that you do to the phone company.
I'm begging for that for somebody
utility.
To, and maybe the DeSantis move in Florida and the Brian Hughes bill in Texas. Maybe it's a
I'll
step
tell
toward
you the
that.
Move.
Maybe
I'll get you to the move.
Identify them as good.
2022, we win, and Congress takes this on. Congress has to take this on. Enough is enough. They don't get to be the arbiter of speech, Mark. They don't.
Help me out with one last thing, because I want to attach myself to this. Let's say there is some virulent, terrible, just maybe not the most obvious, grotesque thing in the world, but something that is where you could gather 100 people and 55 or 60 of them would say, man, that's terrible. That should get you banned. All right. And Twitter or Facebook bans them. And then that person rears up and goes, First Amendment, Mike Gallagher says I can't be banned. What do you do with that person? What do you do?
It's a straw man.
Well, no, what do you do? I'm making the man.
But
real.
That isn't
what do you do?
What do you do? But that's purely hypothetical.
That's right. Answer the hypothetical. What do you
do? That's not what's happening. You're using something to try to happen. You're pivoting away from this.
I'm giving you a question you can't answer because you don't
I just told you ten times.
Answer it. What do you
do? I'm telling you, Congress should be regulating and breaking up these Twitter, Facebook monopolies the way they regulate the phone company. Full stop. That's it.
They should be doing that. So that if the person I've described, who maybe you and even I would agree, that, boy, that's somebody who deserves to get banned. That person, how would that person be denied his opportunity to say, hey, First Amendment, Mike Gallagher says I can't be banned?
How do you defend Verizon saying that person needs to be banned for their speech?
Stop changing the subject. I'm giving you an example of somebody,
who does deserve to be banned. Is this mic on? Do you hear me?
Nobody will ever be banned again. Nobody will ever be banned again by Facebook or Twitter.
Do you like the regulations on the phone company?
Phone company, I don't care. Phone company.
Oh, you don't care. So you know you can't ban somebody from Verizon based on the government regulations.
Exactly. So I just don't know if the government regulation of social media works. I don't know if that works. In this happy la-la land, oh, we're going to give it to social media. They're mean. We don't like the Twitter Unabomber guy. So we're going to make that where he can, you know, I'm going to say this with love.
You're blind on this because you want to play in that filthy sandbox.
Whether I'm there or whether I'm not. That has nothing to do with me.
You can't be okay with what's going on now. I know you better than that.
I hate what's going on.
Well, then stand up.
But then stand up. There's a principle I can't get past. And I want help in getting past it. And I need better help than you're giving me.
Let them win. No, I'm giving you all the help you need. And you ought to see my text messages.
Oh, God. Go open your audience.
Listen, we're trying to talk some sense into you on this.
Sometimes. No, I love you. All right. We're so criminally late. I love you to death. Here comes Mike. He's ready. He's going to bag on me at 10, and I love it. It'll be great, and my Twitter feed will lighten up. All right, listen, 7:55, Mark Davis, 6:60 a.m. He is. Okay, 8 o'clock hour plan. John Lott, author of More Guns, Less Crime on Constitutional Carry, which is close to passing. He is actually at 8:35, which is awesome. I'm carrying this forward right now with you because principle is a tough thing to stub your toe on. Here's the deal. I hate the censorship of Facebook and Twitter, the shutting down of conservative speech. I've seen a couple of thousand followers of mine vanish for no reason. I don't know that they're, they don't go to sleep at night, worried about me. But from the banishment of Trump to the suspension of accounts, it is abhorrent the degree to which they practice ideological favoritism. Okay, so let's stipulate that. They are terrible people doing terrible things to views I agree with. Now, where does the flowchart go? From Brian Hughes, whom I love, Ron DeSantis, whom I love, all these folks, everybody says, well, we need to regulate them. What? How and on what basis? It's not the phone company. It's just not. They're not utilities. They're just not. So just tell me, explain it to me, Lucy, how we conservatives who every damn day are about, oh, got to leave businesses alone. You know, that baker doesn't want to make the gay cake. We can't make him do that. But we can tell big, nasty Facebook and Twitter whom they can allow and whom they can banish. Why? Because they're big and we don't like them? Really? Is that intellectually honest? Help me. Help me. Let's cruise into the 8 o'clock hour. News is next. Your calls thereafter. John Lott, More Guns, Next Crime.